Crib Notes, what parents Google at 3am.
Powered by the Breastfeeding Friend.
For breastfeeding advice, available 24/7 on Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant.
Hi, I'm Rick Kelsey. I'm a dad-to-be and I'm here with Dr. Sarah. Welcome to episode 2 of Crib Notes, the new medical podcast for parents answering the questions that parents Google at 3am.
In this episode, we're joined again by Kirsty Howe. She's a midwife and antenatal teacher, and we'll be covering the first few days with a baby. We'll be talking about your new baby, their medical check, umbilical cord care, and dressing your baby for the first time.
Remember, going forward, these podcasts aren't necessarily in any order, so feel free to flick between them. They're all separate episodes.
So, Kels, are you feeling prepared? I used to hate that question.
Yeah, I am. I feel a little bit like a travelling salesman. I've got all the gear and no baby.
And no idea?
Well, that potentially as well. That potentially as well.
Yeah, I used to hate that question, along with, and is he a good baby? Well, firstly, no, it's a she. She's wearing pink. And what do you really want me to say? Yep, she's just robbed a bank.
So true. So people have been asking us quite a bit about what we do. Well, I'm a BBC broadcaster. I've been there for about 10 years and I also host on the Running Channel. And you, Sarah, are a paediatric doctor.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been working now for about 8.5 years, 6 years in paediatrics, but I've also worked abroad in Malawi and Australia. And I also have a bit of an interest in health promotion and prevention. I did a master's a few years back in public health and worked at the World Health Organization in Geneva, looking at childhood obesity guidelines and food systems policy. So I've been doing a few different things.
Has working abroad changed how you parent?
I don't know. I think it's definitely made me realise that there's different ways to do things, both clinically, actually, and also parenting. It's been quite reassuring to see. I mean, I was really blown away by some of the parents in Malawi who really didn't have very much, but were just doing such an amazing job. It's also made me realise that less is more in so many ways.
And lots of people have asked us how we know each other. Well, we go way back because we went to rival schools.
We did indeed. We managed to survive into adulthood.
And we've got a shared uncle. How does that work? We're not blood related.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, one of those dad's friends who you're not quite sure where he came from.
Well, it's actually with him. I don't know where he did come from. Anyway, let's get on with episode 2. Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.
So let's talk about what you can do in that first 24 hours to make it a little bit easier for mum, dad and baby. Kirsty, the postnatal ward, what's going on in there?
So you've gone from the delivery suite, which is a private room. You'll have a room for yourselves to have your baby in. So you go from that, which is calm. You have probably a toilet, potentially a shower in there. And you almost make yourself at home by the time you've had the baby. You've probably been in there a while. So you then go from there, your calm oasis, to the postnatal ward. And it can feel a little bit overwhelming. It's busy, especially in certain months. September's always a really busy time for the postnatal wards. And it might feel a little bit chaotic and noisy. And you also have just had a midwife and potentially a student midwife all to yourself during delivery. But when you move on to the postnatal ward, you'll have to share a midwife. So really, really good idea if there are student midwives on the postnatal ward. Just lap them up and...
You have so much more time, so it's great. You get an extra pair of hands, basically. Mm.
Exactly. Anything that you need help with, just ask one of the student midwives because they're learning as well, and they absolutely love supporting new mums and babies. So although it can feel a bit chaotic and busy, don't worry because you'll soon settle into it, and it can feel quite nice knowing that other new mums, new dads, and babies are all together learning. Learning at the same time.
It can be a bit of a shock. Obviously, you've just gone through labour, so you've got this new baby, but also you're still very much in recovery. But actually having other mums around, you can feel like a little bit of a safety net, can't it?
Yeah,
being
definitely.
Surrounded by a little community and having the midwives and the breastfeeding counsellors on tap.
How long do you actually stay in the postnatal ward? Because in the UK... you stay in a lot shorter than other places in the world, don't you?
That's right. So when our parents had us, they were in for weeks.
Yeah.
And still in other countries, it's, you know, a good few days. But actually here, it's a lot shorter.
So you can actually have a 6-hour discharge if your delivery was straightforward and you don't need any extra pain relief and the baby's fed well. The midwife
would be quite quick, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the midwife would be more than happy for you to go home then. But as a new mum, everything is new, and we would really advise that you maybe stay for at least one night just to have some help with breastfeeding. It's so brilliant that you have this little buzzer next to your bed, and if you are having any problems, you can just press your buzzer and somebody can come and just give you a little bit of support. When you go home, you haven't got that magic buzzer anymore. So it's really nice just to get some confidence.
Mm. And especially with the first baby.
Exactly. Get some confidence. And then when you feel ready and you're happy with how the baby's been feeding, then you can head home.
Mm. So ultimately, it's up to you. But I think just take advantage of what support is available to you. It can feel incredibly stressful being in there. And I think the dads are often the ones who are itching to get off. I know I actually wasn't that keen on wanting to go. I'd been in this little bubble, and the idea of going home felt a bit wrong. Like, how am I allowed to go home with this new baby? I felt like I was stealing it.
I suppose it's also about getting to know your baby in hospital, isn't it? So, you know, the basics, feeding, nappy changing, baths. Is this something that you can do for the first time?
Or, so thinking about how to nappy change, how to bath, you know, you'll be questioning every little noise that the baby makes. And actually, that's the whole point. Whilst you're there, you can ask the midwives and the doctors who are around, if needed, about these sorts of things. Initially, the baby will just, you know, feed and sleep, and actually maybe not be that awake in between feeding sessions, because babies, when they're first born, they sleep for about 16 to 20 hours a day. So, you know, try and use that time to also get a little bit of rest yourself, and really look after yourself.
Exactly. And you are allowed visitors on the postnatal ward. They normally have a allocated visiting time, which usually is in the late afternoon, early evening. However, it is a really special time, like Rick said, to get to know your baby, to try and work out how to feed your baby, and also the baby's getting to know you. And it can be a little bit disruptive if you've got people coming and going all the time, especially if there's visitors there that you wouldn't be comfortable feeding in front of. So it might be a good idea just to have really, really close family members if you really want them to come to the hospital, and then just save all the other visits when you go home.
You'll be much more comfortable feeding the baby without having to be covering up. And actually, if you're having visitors in and out all the time, it does naturally make you interrupt that, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, definitely.
So the first few days, we really just talk about feeding on demand. You don't need to worry about any specific regime. And that really does help your milk to come in. We'll be talking about that more in later podcasts. But remember, the milk doesn't come in till a couple of days down the line.
A normal feed can be any time from 5 minutes to 20 minutes, but it's just keep offering the baby the breast and really getting to know that baby and seeing what little cues they make when they want to feed. Each baby will have something separate that they do. Sometimes they lick their lips or they start licking in the direction of your breast. But it's just getting to know your baby, and that's a really, really special time actually in the hospital, because there's nothing else for you to do. You don't have to put anything in a washing machine or anything else. You just have to sit there and get to know your baby. So it is really precious when you look at it like that.
The first milk as well is something called colostrum, which is a thicker milk. So it's almost like a liquid gold. It's got so many nutrients in it. It's nutrient dense, and the baby only needs a tiny amount. So we talked about in the last episode, it's just a Malteser that the size of the stomach is. So we're really not needing much for most babies. So try not to worry too much about it, and just really trust the midwives to help you with the latch, because it doesn't necessarily come naturally. You need people to help you do that initially.
And before you go home, the midwives will actually do some checks on your baby, won't they?
Yeah.
To make sure it's safe.
Yeah, so like we said before, we would normally weigh the baby soon after it's born, but not too soon, because we want you to have lots of lovely skin to skin. However, if for whatever reason you end up being in the hospital for longer than a few days, the baby might get weighed another time before you go home. But that isn't routine. That's only if you've been in for some extra days for something else.
It is normal for the baby to actually lose a little bit of weight. So the midwives will, you know, when you go home, they'll be monitoring that. You don't need to do any extra weighing. They will keep an eye on the baby.
Exactly, yeah. It's completely normal in those first few days for the babies to lose up to 10%. So we don't normally weigh again before you go home, unless in special circumstances. So that will normally be done when a community midwife comes and sees you. Other things we'll be checking is the umbilical cord. We want to check that it's nice and clean and dry. And we often suggest just popping it out the top of the nappy so that it can get lots of air to it and it can dry.
So we'll want you when you're at home as well. If there's any sort of redness or discharge around, just let your midwife know, just because we don't want it to have any infection.
Yeah, so it'll have a plastic clip on it at the hospital. And then when you go home, the clip and the cord will fall off, normally before day 10.
The Crib Notes podcast is a co-production with The Breastfeeding Friend. It's available on Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant.
So this skill's been loaded with loads of new features and information, including soothing sounds, relaxing music, and lullabies for you and your baby when you're doing the night feed. Plus, Crib Notes is on there too.
Another thing that happens when you're in hospital, we said at delivery we do a head-to-toe check, but it's quite brief. We do a much longer one before you go home. And this is done by either a paediatrician or a specially trained midwife. And that checks everything. So
it's a full MOT.
A full MOT, exactly.
It's still a screening thing. So if you are worried about your baby later down the line, don't think, oh, I've had this check, that means everything's fine. Actually, you need to still, you know, highlight if you're concerned about your baby. But we look in, you know, lots of detail. We listen to the heart, the lungs. We check the eyes with a special ophthalmoscope. We feel the tummy and, you know, check the baby's head, things like the hips as well. So, for example, if your baby was born breech, so with their hips down rather than their head, they would routinely get an ultrasound scan as an outpatient. And, you know, if we felt anything abnormal on the examination, we would do the same.
Your baby will also have their hearing done, ideally before they go home. And this is a normal test that takes a few minutes, and just a little soft-tipped earpiece goes into the baby's ear and they get played a gentle clicking sound. However, quite often there's gunk and little bits and bobs in the baby's ear still from delivery. So don't be alarmed if it needs repeating a few days down the line.
Can babies actually hear when they're asleep?
Yeah. So actually this test is more accurately done when the baby's asleep and there's less distracted noise around. So it's absolutely fine when the baby's asleep. The other thing that we'll be looking at whilst your baby is in hospital is the colour of your baby's skin. So there's something called jaundice, which is relatively common, usually, you know, a couple of days down the line. And this is where your skin goes a yellowish colour. It can be just breastfeeding jaundice, or, for example, hemolysing of the blood can make you jaundice. But sometimes babies need to go under the lights and have to stay in the postnatal ward for a couple more days. It is something we'd need to do extra tests and put the baby under some lights so that we can break down those jaundice levels.
Now, of course, you're in the hospital. At some point, you've got to do the first nappy change.
I like to think that this is the dad's territory. Okay. Because the mums have done a lot of hard work. So
I completely agree with you there, Kirsty.
Yeah. So, Rick, this is one that you need to start practicing.
Okay.
Don't worry, though, because lots of the nappy brands have made it very easy for you. So as long as you get their little bottoms in, there's nice sticky tapes. Yeah, you can't go wrong, really. And you'll soon know about it if you do go wrong, because things will start leaking in all different directions.
Someone said, do you be practicing doing
you'll
nappies to me?
You'll get enough practice when the baby's here.
No,
10 a day.
Exactly. Yes, you can have lots of practice. So the first poo that the baby has is something called meconium. And it's a thick black poo, and it's very much like tar, or how
sticky.
I like to describe it, Marmite. Sorry if you like Marmite. And that's going to be the first one that the baby passes.
That's the lining of the gut coming away from inside. So it's quite normal for it to be black to start with. And then over the next few days, it will gradually change to a greeny colour and then a mustardy, grainy yellow colour.
Or chicken korma, something like that.
So definitely not wanting that tonight now.
No, around day 5, we're aiming for the nappy to look a bit like chicken korma. But like we said, dads are brilliant at doing the nappies. They love to tell the midwives what colour the nappy was. and you become an expert of your baby very quickly.
You become obsessed with baby poo.
Exactly.
And the frequency can be so variable between baby to baby as well. And it can be almost quite projectile initially, can't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And it gets easier because it's messy at the start, but it gets easier.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
until the baby starts eating again around 6 months, then it changes again.
So what about the frequency here for the first kind of 24 hours? What are we looking for?
So at least one poo and one wee. And that's just so that we know that the bowels and the kidneys are working properly. And then from that point onwards, we want 2 wees on day 2, 3 wees on day 3, 4 wees on day 4. And the cycle carries on until about day 6, when the baby regulates how much urine they produce. Poos can be very varied. Some parents will report that their baby poos every time they feed, and other babies, especially if they're breastfed babies, absorb a lot of the nutrients from the breast milk and they don't poo very often at all. So the poos can be really varied, but the colour is the important bit. We want the yellowy poos by day 5, and that just shows that the baby is absorbing all the nutrients and
hydrated.
And it's very well hydrated, exactly. And the number of wees, though, is very important, because that's a key sign that the baby's getting lots of hydration.
Even if you've got a tiny bladder.
I think it can be quite difficult to see the wee initially. So on the back of your nappy, you'll see a little blue strip, and have a look for that and you'll know more clearly about the wees, because often it's mixed in with the meconium at the beginning as well. So they will be asking you about the wees, because it's really important for us to know how hydrated the baby is. But, you know, just that little trick can be quite helpful.
Yeah, and then another trick you can do is a little bit of cotton wool just at the front of the nappy. And if you see that go a little bit yellow, then we know that the baby's weed.
Good tips. So what is normal in the early days? Because they make some funny sounds, don't they?
Oh, gosh. Babies make all kinds of sounds. I think parents can get so worried, because actually babies are quite noisy sleepers as well. It's really normal for a baby to be quite snuffly, sneezing, coughing. If you think about it, they've had all that fluid in their lungs and in their airways that all needs to clear out. And obviously lots of it will have been cleared during labour, but still there'll be some bits that will need clearing out. It doesn't mean that your baby's got a cold. The baby can also have quite periodic breathing, so starts and pauses, which can be quite unnerving. If you are worried, do get your midwife to have a quick look. We are wanting to keep a close eye, for example, if there was any fast breathing, but erratic breathing is something that we do see in newborn babies.
When the babies are in the womb, quite often they'll have bouts of hiccups. And when we're pregnant, we find that really exciting, because yeah, it's really cute. And you know when the next one's going to be, because it's normally...
Yeah, we had some yesterday, actually.
Yeah, and they're so lovely. But parents, for whatever reason, as soon as the baby's born, are really concerned about these hiccups. Mm. So we just try and remind them it's exactly the same baby that was inside, and they're still just doing their little hiccups, so they can continue being cute.
I get hiccups all the time. I'm sure that's nothing to do with what it was like when I was in my mum's tummy, but I do have hiccups.
Do you drink
constantly.
Water backwards?
Yeah, I mean, I've got so many different techniques to get rid of them. They drive me up
the
wall.
You'll be an expert for when the baby's born.
Yeah, I've got so many techniques to teach you.
There's another thing called erythema toxicum, which sounds a very scary name, but actually it's not anything to be worried about at all. Basically baby acne. And, you know, the majority of babies get some degree of this, don't they? And it's something that we really commonly get called to on the postnatal ward. It's basically blotchy red skin with little white or yellow papules. It doesn't cause the baby any harm, any discomfort. It's just the normal activation of the immune system, and as the baby's skin is getting used to the outside world. It usually comes sort of day 2 to 5, and then it goes in a couple of weeks. But really don't worry if you see this. There's lots of other rashes as well that mums also see, things like milk spots, the birthmarks we talked about in the last episode, things like dry, flaky skin, particularly if a baby's postdates, we see that's really common. You don't need to do anything about it. So, you know, the skin can look quite varied, really.
And also, adding on to the postdates, babies often have quite sharp fingernails. Mm. And whilst they're in water, they can't do much harm themselves with these fingernails, but as soon as they're out, they start scratching everything in sight. So lots of clothes have very cleverly got little fold over bits over their hands, because cutting a newborn's nails is
tricky,
very difficult job.
Yeah.
So just allow them to have their little nails for a little bit of time, and just cover them if they are prone to scratching themselves.
On the neonatal ward, they actually talk about just peeling the nails or just biting them off with your teeth as a mother, which sounds very, very strange, because it's actually a bit easier than with scissors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, another tip for you.
I think I'd be terrified.
You'll sometimes see babies making these random jerky movements as well, arms flailing around. This really worries parents, but actually this is completely normal. This is something called the Morrow reflex. And sometimes this can actually startle and wake a baby up. And it's just that they're surprised by, for example, new sounds. And actually sometimes babies... We recommend, for example, swaddling them when they go to sleep, and it stops their jerking movements waking them up.
there's other things that we see in newborn babies, like Sarah talked about before, that their heads can often be a funny shape. If they're born by cesarean, they often will have a very round head. But if they're not born by cesarean and they've gone through the birth canal, they might have a pointy head, or they might have one side might be a slightly different shape to the other side. That is completely normal, and it does just change.
It does just go. Parents always worry about this when we're on the baby check. They think, is my baby permanently going to have an abnormal head? Nope, this is something that will go very quickly, and you don't need to worry too much about it. They can still be a head model.
Yeah, exactly. And they may, if the doctor did have to give any assistance when the baby was born, so either by using a pair of forceps or a vacuum onto their head, they may also have some marks either on their face or their head. Again, these babies are so resilient, and these marks heal really, really quickly. But you might notice if it was forceps, little marks on the cheeks, or if it was a vacuum delivery, a little round patch on the head. Other things that you might notice is for girls, because they've passed through the birth canal, they get lots of your hormones through them during that delivery. So you can see them have quite swollen breast tissue, and they might also have a very small amount of vaginal bleeding, which for parents is always really worrying. But we normally expect it just to happen once and then for it to stop. And it's just the mum's hormones passing through the baby. We do always want to just see the nappy if we can, just to reassure you that's what it is. The boys as well also have swollen breast tissue. They can have swollen breast tissue, exact same reason, it's hormonal, and quite large scrotums. And the dads always get very excited. Oh, looks exactly the same as mine. But no, that's nothing to do with the dad. That is just hormones going through the baby. Other things that you might see is something called cradle cap. And that's yeah, that's completely normal, and it's just dry, flaky scalp that would be on the baby's head.
There comes a point where you've got to dress the baby for the first time. Now, am I right in saying that it's best to dress a baby with one more layer than what you'd be wearing? Is that right?
That's generally a good rule of thumb, because some parents actually overdress a baby. They worry the baby's going to get too cold, but actually, if anything, I worry the other way around.
Yeah.
We want the baby to be in a... Yeah, I worry about the baby being too hot. So we want, for example, a baby when you get home to be sleeping in a room temperature roughly about 18 to 20 degrees. And we say just put the baby in one layer more than you are. So a little vest, and then a baby grower is usually absolutely fine. When the baby's first born, they tend to put a hat on to keep the baby nice and warm. When you get home, the baby doesn't need to sleep in a hat, actually. We want the baby to be able to regulate the temperature through their head.
In hospital, often the rooms are quite cool and they're quite drafty, so they might put a hat on and to stop the baby losing extra heat from their head. However, when they get home, they're not needed for sleeping. In fact, we actively discourage babies sleeping in hats, so it's just for outside.
And babies, when they are sleeping, we tend to put them either in a little sleeping bag, or they may be in, for example, a swaddle. And we recommend that the baby is put at the bottom of the cot, so there's no risk of them wriggling down and, for example, a blanket going over their head.
And any blankets you use, we like them to be cellular blankets, so the ones with little holes in, so that if for whatever reason they did go anywhere near a baby's face, they can breathe through them.
The other thing just to mention as well is that nowadays we always recommend babies sleeping on their back. So in the olden days, and all of us actually would have been sleeping on our front.
Yeah, don't call us the olden days.
I know, so, I mean, absolutely. But now there's been lots of studies in the olden days. There's been lots of studies that have shown that it significantly reduces the risk of what we call sudden infant death syndrome if a baby sleeps on their back.
Let's talk about mum's recovery then, because we do need to potentially manage some pain and reassure about stitches, don't we?
Exactly. So we've talked loads about the babies, and actually we've got a new mum as well. Mm. So this mum has gone through so much to produce this wonderful little baby, and we really, really need to take care of our mums. It is amazing how quickly mums want to get up and about. Probably after the first hour, if they've had a normal delivery, they're really, really keen to get up. And we do encourage people to have showers if that's what they want to do. But if that's not what you want to do and you're not feeling like that, if you've lost a little bit extra blood than normal, anything like that, just really take it easy on it. Go easy on yourself. the midwife will probably be the best person to advise you whether or not you're ready to get up or not yet. If they do say that they would prefer you to stay in bed for a little while, really listen to them, because they see new mums all the time and they really have your best interests at heart. So if that's the case, that we'll do everything we can to help you get washed and ready in bed rather than going for a walk to the shower. If, however, you've had a cesarean or you had an epidural in delivery, this process is going to take a little bit longer. Your legs are going to feel wobbly. You probably will still have a catheter in because you won't feel the urge to go to the toilet. So that's going to take a little bit longer. So we'd probably advise at least 4 to 6 hours that you can rest before you get up. And that's a really nice period of time that you can just spend with your baby and rest.
I think some mums get so excited, and the adrenaline surge, I think, after all of this can really make you feel like you want to be, you know, up and doing things, but you just want to take it a little bit carefully as well, don't you? It's good to be mobile, but don't be, you know, charging around. Make sure that you look after yourself.
Exactly. Labour is often likened to a marathon. So exactly the same recovery. We want you to relax, put your feet up and have people bringing you cups of tea and things. You might feel a bit sore and swollen after you've had a baby. You will probably have been offered a very good painkiller if you had stitches, but that will wear off and it's likely that you'll feel quite sore and swollen. So a few tips and tricks are just try not to sit down on your bottom for too long. You can use things like donut rings.
And even things like pillows, you can just position
pillows
if you haven't
got a ring. There's something called a valet cushion, which is just water in a cushion that moves around. A really handy tip for your maternity pads is to put a little bit of water on them, put them in the freezer, and then, you can use those so that they just give a little bit of relief.
Cooling, even things like ice packs.
Yeah,
and there
exactly.
are some specific ones as well that you can break and they cool down quite quickly. Fem pads, aren't they?
All of those. But if you don't have access to anything like that, then just a little bit of water on a sanitary towel, pop it in the freezer, and that can really give you some nice relief. You might be terrified about having a wee or opening your bowels, but a little tip for having a wee is if you get a jug of warm water and you just pour it on the stitches whilst you're having a wee, it can really help
soothe, just take the
sting off. That can be a little tip that you can do both in the hospital and at home.
What about painkillers then? Are painkillers actually okay while you're breastfeeding?
We would never recommend anything that wasn't okay for breastfeeding. And like I said, if you have stitches, they probably would have offered you a suppository, which can last up to 12 hours.
It's really helpful.
Which, can really help just to make everything nice and pain-free down there. But going forward, you'll be offered regular, whilst you're in hospital, especially regular analgesia. So that's normally paracetamol and ibuprofen. And you haven't been able to take ibuprofen during pregnancy, but you can definitely take it once you've had the baby. And that will help just make everything start to feel a bit more comfortable and to heal. And you'll be advised to do that when you get home as well.
Being aware that obviously in labour you may not have been drinking that much as well and you've not been moving around, you are also a little bit prone to being constipated. So just being aware of that and just making sure that you think about, you know, drinking lots of fluids and eating things like prunes that can help get things going is really important, because that first bowel opening can be quite a thing that mums get anxious about, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think all of us who've had babies have been there, where you're absolutely terrified, but you don't also want to go the other way and never go to the toilet. So
just
be brave and it will be okay. The stitches, they dissolve, and they normally dissolve in about 2 weeks' time, but it's a really good idea just to get midwives, both in the hospital and when you go home, to have a look at them and just check that they're healing really nicely. And if you're ever worried about them, just make sure somebody has a look at them.
And it's about keeping them clean. You don't need to put any specific products on them, do you? But it's just about making sure that those sanitary pads we talked about earlier, you're changing them every single time that you go to the bathroom, and just keeping the area nice and clean.
And always, always wash your hands before and after changing sanitary pads. That's a really good way of keeping brilliant hygiene. So often after you've had a baby, people might tell you that it will be like a heavy period. However, everybody's periods will have been different in the past, so that's not a very accurate way of explaining to mums about the bleeding. So instead, we tend to explain it in that the bleeding may last for up to 6 weeks, and it will be heavier to start with and will gradually become less heavy. But we don't want you to be soaking through sanitary towels. We want you to be able to keep one on for a few hours before you have to change the next one. If you are soaking through them really, really quickly, then you need to just make sure that somebody knows about that, and they can come and just check that your uterus is contracted. And the way they do that is by giving your tummy a really good rub and just feeling if it's contracted nicely.
The other thing they want to know about is clots as well.
Yes, they want to know about clots. So anything larger than a 50p piece, we want to see that. So if you're at home, you can take a photo, you can show somebody, especially if it's gone down the toilet, but we always want to know if you've passed a larger clot. This is because we don't want it to be a bit of placenta. We want to know that all the placenta came away after delivery. So anything that's larger than a 50p piece, always get checked.
And can we talk about after a C-section? Is there anything that you recommend specifically for mums after that?
So cesareans have often been called the easy option for people
that unhelpful.
Are too posh to push. However, anybody that has had a cesarean would hugely disagree with this. It is a major abdominal surgery and can take up to at least, I would say, 6 weeks to recover from, if not more. But 20% of first-time mums will have a cesarean, whether it is advised in pregnancy or whether you had to have one during labour.
Or for personal choice.
Oh, yeah, or personal choice, exactly. And if in any other part of the hospital you had huge abdominal surgery, you would not be given a newborn baby to look after around the clock. So it's very important for first-time mums who are having a cesarean section to have a support crew who can be on hand to help you when you get home, because all we really want you to be doing if you've had a cesarean section is feeding your baby, not lifting, not twisting, not overstretching. We really want to give that uterus the best chance of healing. So sometimes it's really helpful to have a family member come and stay if your partner has to go back to work soon, because you will need that extra help. And it's really strongly
advised. It's
so helpful
just having someone to help, because actually you really, really don't want to be over pushing yourselves. This scar might look like it's healing nicely from the outside, but you've got to remember that goes all the way through, including into your uterus. And you don't want to be over pushing that. You need to be careful when you are lifting anything heavy in your baby, whether that be the car seat, anything around the house, just to look after yourself for the long term.
Exactly. And going back to the bleeding, even if you have a cesarean section, you'll still have that postnatal bleeding, because it's the uterus recovering, and where the placenta had attached, it's that area that's expelling the bleeding. So that will be the same whether you've had a cesarean section or a normal delivery. So even if you've had a cesarean, you'll need to be regularly up to the toilet and changing your pads, and that can be exhausting in itself. So just having an extra pair of hands at home can be really, really helpful.
Now, when it comes to actually going home from the hospital to getting back to your own bed as such, is it actually true that the midwife will actually come and look at your car to see if you've actually got a car seat? Is that real?
We don't have enough time, unfortunately, to do that.
You just bring
Wouldn't
it in.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah.
You bring your car seat in.
Right.
Yeah, so you bring a car seat up to the ward. And actually, when you drive with your baby for the first time, it's
terrifying.
Yeah, okay.
My husband drove so slowly over the bumps.
Yeah.
Just so nervous.
You'll start having one of you in the back on that first journey home.
Yeah.
And that might carry on for a little while, because you end up just wanting to be with them and be watching them. Because it's quite daunting driving with a baby, we want to see that you can put a baby in a car seat safely, you know how to use the straps, and that we know that the baby's not got too many clothes on, because often when you get in a car, it's the parents or the adults turn the temperature up in the car to suit them. However, the baby might have extra layers of clothing on. So we just show the parents how to put the baby in what they're wearing, and then add layers for the journey to the car, which you can then take off. So it's just education. We want to just teach parents the safest way to use the car seats.
Don't overthink things, though. It is incredible how quickly, I imagine, you just pick this stuff up.
I think that's the thing. Yeah. Going home can seem quite daunting, but don't overthink it. Just trust in yourself. And ultimately, you'll soon realise that everyone's winging it. It's just a case of getting to be confident with your own self as a parent. Babies are parent-proof.
And exactly. We had no idea either.
No idea.
So every podcast, we like to bust some myths at the end. So these are quick fire and just give us your thoughts on them. Kirsty, babies only see in black and white.
Well, it's very hard to tell what a baby can see through testing and things. However, we know that it's light and dark, which they differentiate from. And the most clear definition of light and dark is through black and white. So you can see babies really focus on black and white things. There's all these books and out there and all these products. However, the best one I found was ASOS packaging.
Oh.
They love ASOS packaging.
So babies actually as well, just to mention, they can only see very near them to start with. So they can only see about 8 to 10 inches to start with, which is basically up to the mum's face. They can only hold a gaze for a few seconds and they kind of tend to focus on the eyes and the mouth. But, you know, it's only as they get older that their vision gets further.
Next one, newborn babies need lots of toys.
They really don't. In the beginning, their priorities really are just sleeping and feeding. They don't need lots of stimulation. And actually, that's sometimes the issue. People overstimulate them to start with. That will come in a few weeks' time, a few months' time. That will come.
Babies need bathing every single day.
No. Would say that baby skin is really, really delicate and it's adapting to life outside of the womb.
And you want it to absorb all that lovely vernix to start with that we talked about earlier, the amazing baby moisturiser. So you don't want to wash it necessarily too early on.
Yeah, so just bear with the babies. It's a huge ordeal for them to go through even having a nappy change or clothes change, having all these garments removed. Having to do all of that and then put them into water where their temperature changes, these are all really big experiences for a little baby. So if you do bath babies in the newborn stage, just make sure that they're very short because
they can get cold quickly.
Yeah, they get cold really quickly. I would recommend to do their head first, bathe their head first and dry their head and then bathe their body just so that they don't get too cold. But they definitely don't need bathing every day. Instead, just top and tail them and make sure that their bottoms keep really clean.
And finally, babies recognise parents' voice at birth.
Well, they can hear mum's and dad's voices from when they were inside the womb. So they actually do find it really soothing hearing parents' voices afterwards. So do talk to your baby because, yeah, they recognise those sounds and it's really calming for them.
Yeah, completely agree. Our little baby even recognised our dog's bark.
Oh, sweet.
When he was born, he kept looking at the dog and we were like, oh.
I know you.
He must have heard that's Alfie being protective.
Crib Notes, what parents Google at 3 a.m.
Powered by the Breastfeeding Friend.
For breastfeeding advice, available 24/7 on Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant.
Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.